Good morning. I call the
Fraud Prevention and State Agency Oversight Committee to order. Today is
potentially our last
hearing, depending on the views of our friends on the other side of the aisle. We have spent 2 years discussing
fraud in agencies, whistleblowers, had testimony from commissioners and the public. And the work we've done has hopefully carved a path for the next legislature in the next biennium to continue this important work. It's going to take many years, unfortunately, to undo the damage that has been done to taxpayers and vulnerable residents, but we must continue to expose the fraud, to strengthen internal controls, and to make sure that fraudsters and agency officials are held accountable. Before we get to our majority report, first we'll move to approve the minutes of May 5th. Representative Schultz, have you had a chance to review the minutes?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move adoption of the minutes from Tuesday, May 5th, 2026.
Representative Schultz moves the adoption of the May 5th minutes. Is there any discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, nay. The minutes are adopted. Next, the purpose of this meeting is to go through the majority report, which was posted to our website and which will be available to the public even after session through the House Library and in the committee page on the website. I would like to just give a brief overview and then note for the record that under our rules, the minority has the opportunity to present a minority report as well, which would be due Friday, and we're happy to do another hearing to adopt the minority report. And I actually think, you know, I encourage you to do it. I think it's important for the public record for the work of this committee. So as members of the public may or may not know, this committee is historic in that the Minnesota House of Representatives, it's the only time we've ever had an oversight committee in the history of the legislature. And this was created in the wake of the tie in January 2025 as part of the negotiated power sharing agreement. The House Fraud Prevention and State Agency Oversight Committee was created. So at the end of this session, the committee will no longer exist when we adjourn sine die, everything dissolves. But I highly recommend to the next legislature that they reconstitute the Oversight Committee, because I think institutionally we have played a very important role in taking a broader look across all the agencies at the opportunity for fraud, internal controls that have not worked or enabled fraud, and trying to hold agencies accountable. And I think because we've had this broad lens, we've been able to see the pattern across many programs and across different agencies, and I think that has served the public well, and I hope that this work continues. So with that, I will just give a brief overview of our report, and I encourage the public and members of the committee, if you haven't read it, to read it, and I will also send it out to all the members of the House in both parties, and they can hopefully read it over the interim, because there's a lot to learn from our work over the last 2 years, and we need to make sure that we continue to push for the changes that we've identified. So generally speaking, we found that the Walz administration enabled fraud by having a culture that accepted fraud, tolerated fraud, tried to suppress fraud in some ways, and did not hold anyone accountable in the agencies. And the public sees that there are being criminal indictments and charges and sentencing for the criminals who engaged in this fraud through our federal partners at the U.S. Attorney's Office. And we're grateful for the justice on the criminal side, but we also need accountability in the agencies and in the administration, and we will continue to push for that. Secondly, I think when we started this work, I don't think we even grasped the scale of the fraud. And I think one of the values of this committee is exposing the scope of the fraud that sadly has gone on in Minnesota government. We first saw it in childcare, then it went to Feeding Our Future. And from there, that same pattern morphed into a lot of the Medicaid waivered services programs. So many of the programs that we've looked at in our hearings, housing stabilization, integrated community support, sober homes, non-emergency medical transportation, all of these vectors of fraud in a lot of the Medicaid waivered services programs really were spawned from the original fraud back in childcare and then Feeding Our Future. And some of the same actors were involved in these webs of fraud. And I just think, certainly I didn't fully understand that when we got into this, and I think that has been an important contribution of our work. So we also, on page 9, for anyone who's following along, the anatomy of fraud, which I know our colleague, Representative Greenman, also called the business model of fraud. We spent a lot of time talking about this and identifying these patterns, and I think that it's an important thing for the public to look at and to understand, to recognize these signs, and for agency personnel to realize this is the pattern. It's not new. It's not rocket science. We have seen the same pattern over and over and over, and we have to clamp down on it right away. The agencies had the tools. They could have done more on the front end. They could have declared the programs high risk much earlier. They could have done unannounced site inspections. They could have done prepayment reviews. Any of these things years ago would have helped reduce the volume of the fraud, and it's unfortunate that that did not happen, but I do think the agencies now are doing more, and we expect them to do more going forward. Then the rest of the report is topical. We go through our hearings and our findings from child care fraud, from Feeding Our Future, from the different topics we considered and the hearings we had in all these vectors of fraud. And it's very detailed, but I think it's really important not only to show the findings, but then at the end of the report, we go through our recommendations. And the recommendations are the roadmap. The findings are the roadmap for how to spot and stop fraud, not only for our state, but in other states. I think other states are now also taking this seriously. But the recommendations are things we need to implement yet this session and then next year in future sessions so that we can actually stop the fraud, because it is still going on. As we saw last week when we were here, or 2 weeks ago, the FBI conducted 22 raids. Yesterday, there was an indictment in a raid that had happened by a couple weeks ago in SNAP. So the first SNAP indictment came out yesterday. This is going on in real time in our state, and we cannot turn a blind eye, as the Walz administration has done, and we cannot say, oh, we're done for session, we're not doing this anymore. No. This work has to continue. It's incumbent on all of us who now know the scope of this to continue the work. And although the committee will be adjourned, our staff and I are going to continue to do the investigation from all the whistleblower reports we keep doing. Our committee will keep doing investigative work and turning credible findings over to law enforcement over the interim. Potentially, we will hold informational hearings if warranted, and hopefully we will be gearing up for additional legislation next session when the body comes back. So I really encourage people to take a look at the recommendations section, and I encourage my colleagues, if you choose to put together a minority report, that you also have a very robust recommendation section. So I look forward to that. So with that, I'm going to open it up for any statements or questions, and I look forward to the discussion. Thank you, members, for your hard work this session. It literally has made a difference for our state, and I'm grateful to everyone who's been serving on the committee. Lee Pinto.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Maybe a question, will there be, it sounds like you plan to have a vote. Is there like a motion to adopt the report, or how are you planning to do this process-wise?
Yes, so I will move adoption of the report. I guess I can move it now, and then we can have the discussion. So I move the adoption of the majority report for the 2025-2026 session. It's seconded by Vice Chair Anderson, and now we can discuss the adoption of the report. Lee Pinto.
Okay, thank you, Madam Chair. I'm gonna wait for you. I did want to note that Representative Elkins is in budget negotiations. That's why he's not able to join us today.
Yes, thank you. And I'll just interrupt that Representative Nash is likewise occupied with, I believe, Ways and Means or something. So he has another meeting. I can't remember.
Hope it's not Ways and Means, because I'm in Ways and Means as well.
Then you would be there.
I guess we'll find out. Madam Chair, Representative Greenman and I plan to abstain from the vote, and because we care about transparency, I want to tell you and the public why. I want to recount to the public how this process has gone. I had asked if the three members of the minority could provide input on the report or even see it a few days in advance so we'd have time to review and give comments. Instead, this is an 80-page report posted less than 24 hours ago, full of partisan nonsense and speculation, some good information as well, but a lot of errors. Just to provide one example, it says the Attorney General has prosecuted very few Medicaid fraud cases, when in fact, we heard in this committee an evidence that it's one of the most effective Medicaid fraud control units of its size in the country. Many other examples, but you've said you won't consider any changes to it, won't delay the vote. And I want to note that this document has already been signed by five of the members of the committee. When it was posted, it had already been presumably reviewed, approved, and signed by five of the eight members of the committee. And the other three members of the committee saw it less than 24 hours before the vote to adopt. So the Republican members already signed. You won't consider any changes. You've said we can't be a part of it. So I don't know what the point is of why we're even voting and what good a partisan report such as this and a partisan approach has for the serious work that our state has to do on fraud. Look, everyone is mad about fraud. Fraud has no political bias. We are in a tied house. True progress requires collaboration. We have seen that in other committees. We could have worked across the aisle together in this committee as well. But this committee has been so committed to winning political points that it's achieved nothing. And having this document as the conclusion is sort of the final confirmation. This document that came together without any input, any review, anything from three of the eight members of the committee. So here's what, to my mind, here's what we've learned from the committee. We've learned that when you commit time to making a problem a spectacle, you take time away from the actual work to solve the problems. In many ways, you create skepticism around the problem that even hinders the work. Like when Operation Metro Surge set us back in the fight against fraud by driving out the U.S. attorneys who had been leading that very fight. We also learned that fraud prevention, as it's a serious issue, will in fact happen in serious committees. While we were in this committee, listening to partisan presentation after partisan presentation, many bills were making their way through the legislative process, and supported, may I say, by Republicans and by Democrats. Bills that increased oversight, hired more investigators, cleaned up grant management, held criminals accountable, created the Office of Inspector General. Every other committee did the work that this committee could have, and most importantly, the committee showed that you've created a second reality, a second approach, because when you only tell half the story, well, then you see what you want to see and say what you want to be true. You can't fathom that the Attorney General has, in fact, prosecuted and convicted hundreds of people for Medicaid fraud because it doesn't fit the narrative. You don't understand why voters are marked as inactive to catch fraud because you need to believe that there's election fraud in Minnesota or that reality breaks. We're not talking about the president pardoning criminal fraudsters, white-collar crime and wage theft, about tax evasion. So these are all the ways in which when you create this second reality, we're not willing to talk about the nuance, the private businesses gaming the system, getting away with it. And so while some people are playing to social media, you end up missing crucial parts of the problem. We need to live in one reality and take a serious problem more seriously. So someone who prosecutes fraud myself outside the legislature, I genuinely hoped for real work coming out of the committee, and I'm genuinely disappointed. What a missed opportunity. And I hope that social media followers enjoyed this because it was clearly about them and not the people of Minnesota. This document that's already been signed by five of the eight members, I suspect that those people want the document that they've already signed to be something that is presented, and good luck with that. This is a real missed opportunity. Thank you.
Thank you, Lee Pinto. I would like to respond to that, and I'm sure many of my colleagues would as well. First of all, I want to remind you and the body and the public that this is an oversight committee, and the role of the oversight committee is to perform an oversight function. We bring people in from the agencies, from the administration, we hear from the public, we hear from whistleblowers, and the product of an oversight committee is a report, generally a majority report and a minority report. And just to make sure that we were well within, like, tradition of other oversight bodies because this is new to our legislature. I worked with the House of Representatives Oversight Committee in Washington, D.C. And indeed, they told me that they always produce a majority report and a minority report separately, and they don't give any advance notice to the minority, any opportunity to review it. They each just produce their own report. And we gave you 24 hours. I realized that I wished to give you more, but just for circumstances of how time was going with some personal issues with our staff who were working on it, we were not able to get it done as soon as possible. But 24 hours is more than normal process in the oversight committee. And I told you at least a month ago, and when we formed the committee, we had in the rules that there was going to be the opportunity for a majority report and a minority report. So when the committee was constituted and we voted on our rules, that was signaled. And then I told you in person probably a month ago, and I invited you to get a minority report done. I welcome your comments. And so for you to say that this was an alternate reality or the not proper way to handle it is mistaken and misunderstanding the role of the Oversight Committee. All of us, as I've said in previous hearings, have been involved in good bipartisan work, which I support, to pass bills through the legislature that have had great bipartisan support, including the work of Vice Chair Anderson and the team who did the OIG bill. Fantastic bipartisan work in the committees of jurisdiction, which are the committees that pass those bills. All of those bills had to go through other committees, and that's where that legislation work was done. Our role is to have hearings, to uncover fraud, to find ways to strengthen internal controls, and then create those bills that get passed by other committees. And we have done that work, and I'm proud of the bipartisan work we have done. We have significantly, through your suggestion and leadership, we have significantly reduced the number of earmarks coming out of this legislature. We have expanded whistleblower protection. We have passed the Independent Office of Inspector General bill. We've had multiple bills to strengthen internal controls. We have done, I think, a very excellent body of work through our committee, in other committees, and as a body of this legislature. And that work needs to continue. That's why we have a very robust recommendation section. But the work we've done over the last 2 years has significantly contributed to that. And then I also wanted to just reference something about being in an alternative reality. I just thought that was such an odd phrase because I felt like that's how the public and the administration has felt for so long. There has been billions of dollars of fraud going on in this state, and the administration has chosen, actively chosen, to ignore and suppress information of the fraud and keep it from the public and keep it from law enforcement so things weren't getting done. They've been creating an alternate reality that we finally pulled the curtain back. And the public is grateful. And that has been, I think, a significant contribution of this committee. And I also wanted to touch very briefly on the work of the Attorney General. He did appear before the committee twice. And I do think they've done some prosecutions. I sent a letter to the Attorney General, I believe in March or April, asking for a list of all of the cases they've taken, how much money they've recovered, the resolution of the cases, because they have, as the Attorney General has said many times, original jurisdiction in Medicaid cases. It is shocking to me that when they have original jurisdiction, my understanding is that they've recovered $80 million, which is a drop in the bucket of more than $9 billion. And I asked the Attorney General for a complete listing of all their cases, the resolution, because he claimed credit for dissolving 17 nonprofits associated with this. Most of them had already been dissolved. So I asked for details on that. I have never had a response from the Attorney General's office. I would still love one. But while I do agree that the Medicaid Fraud Control Unit has done some good work, and I appreciate that they're taking a lead on some of these SNAP cases, it's the feds doing SNAP. They had a prosecution in the Attorney General's case a couple weeks ago that actually and this is not a reflection on the Attorney General, but the judge allowed a low bail and the guy absconded. and now is in Kenya. I mean, so their record is fine, but I would not say it's stellar because of the volume of the fraud and the low number of prosecutions. And I think we also have serious questions, as I've outlined in the report, about the Attorney General's relationship with some of the fraudsters. He met with them while he was defending the Minnesota Department of Education. And that raises serious questions about how robust his defense was, or if it wasn't. He has, and I've outlined it in the report, conflicting statements. At some points, he claims great credit for being involved, and at other points, he said he has no knowledge of the case. So we had asked the Attorney General to return to address some of these questions. He declined, but I would just counter your robust defense of the Attorney General and say that there is still a lot of things about his record on Medicaid prosecutions that are unclear, and I hope he will respond to our inquiry. Representative Schultz.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and you're doing a great job at just outlining exactly what this committee has been up to and also the results of our work. So well done. But I actually want to respond directly to Representative Pinto and the claims that he made in his remarks moments ago. And he said that what we presented as it related to the Ellison Medicaid Fraud Unit, that what we suggested was inaccurate. And at the same time, he didn't bring any evidence or state how many cases. He said it was wrong of us to say that the Medicaid Fraud Unit has not taken enough action on Medicaid fraud investigations and then failed to list any specifically. So he just labels it and says, you know, we have the best, and then provides no evidence, provides no detail to his claim. Literally failed to do so, while then also making a claim that this committee had partisan presentations that took place over 25 hearings. And if you open to page 2 of the report, Representative Pinto, what you will see is that of 25 meetings, 23 of them included presentations from Governor Walz's administration. Presentations from Governor Walz's administration, from his Department of Human Services, from his Department of, or his Office of Management and Budget, from countless other agencies, including DEED, as it relates to paid family and medical leave, as it relates to grant management. These are the partisan presentations, presentations from Democrats. That's what they are. 23 of 25 meetings from this Republican-controlled committee. We allowed the administration to provide presentations at 23 of 25 hearings. So let's then talk about the process on this report that's in front of us. Let's talk about how this report, which is 84 pages long, was delivered with notification that it was coming, and the work of our committee that has been done over these 2 years was delivered within 24 hours of this hearing, which brings to mind a memory for all of us. The 2023-2024 omnibus bill that arrived to the floor of the House at 11:10 p.m. to be voted on, that was over 1,400 pages in length. Oh, and by the way, it arrived in some form or fashion where no member was able to see it or read it at all, whether online or whether in a printed copy. It did not exist. And yet, the members of this committee on the Democrat side of the aisle, Representative Pinto, Representative Greenman, and Representative Elkins, all voted for a 1,400-page bill that no one had ever seen before. It didn't exist. You could not find it. And somehow, delivering an 84-page report that is the summation of the work that we've done 24 hours in advance is too much for you to flip through. Well, probably later today, we'll take up some bill that hasn't had that same amount of time and be expected to vote on it. And yet somehow it's partisan for us to bring forward this report here and allow you the chance to provide input on it and to allow you the chance to vote on it. Fascinating, I'll just say that. especially when you're trying to label the work of this committee as being hyper-partisan and that we didn't do work together. When at the same time, I believe it's now 2 weeks ago, we passed four great fraud prevention bills on a bipartisan basis that were supported by members of this committee for payment withholds, to ensure that agencies were stopping grants going to convicted fraudsters. That was a Bonner bill. Or increasing the statute of limitations, or enhancing the ability of the Bureau of Criminal Apprehension as it relates to identity theft and fraud, or the work of Vice Chair Anderson and the Independent Office of Inspector General bill. Or the fact that prior to this committee's existence, Representative Pinto, prior authorization was not done for Medicaid-funded service providers. And now? Now we're doing that. All of that has happened in the time that this committee existed. Then let's also talk about one of your other claims, that there's no election fraud in Minnesota. Mm-hmm. And at the same time, and I'm sure that my colleague, Representative Altendorf, can give you the exact details because there are specific examples of convicted election fraud in Minnesota. While at the same time, you on the other side of the aisle passed legislation in 2023 and 2024 to allow for people without lawful status in our country to have the exact same driver's license to be able to be used as a mechanism of identification to vote. That is what has happened while the city that Representative Greenman represents has literally provided the guidance for them to be able to vote in municipal elections using the same voter registration system that is then shared with the Secretary of State's office. While at the same time that Secretary of State Steve Simon has rejected the request from the Department of Justice to ensure that we are following federal election law, to ensure that there are only lawful people voting in our elections. This is today's Democrat Party. The Democratic Party, the picture has been painted. It's been painted in this committee. It's been painted over these last few years. And it's a stark contrast to where Minnesotans are at today. So there's the truth.
Representative Greenman.
What Lead Pinto said. You just said that this committee was about the picture having been painted about what the Democratic Party is. But this committee is called the Fraud Prevention and Government Oversight Committee, not the make the case and picture what you think the Democratic Party is. And I think that that's the point. I also have noticed that we seem to have dropped the fraud prevention part of the conversation. So I've heard you say a lot about government oversight, but fraud prevention actually means advancing solutions that get to the root of the problem and all of the other solutions you mentioned. Representative Schultz, you mentioned a bunch of bills. None of those bills went through this committee, and all of those bills would have happened without this committee because of the work that, and some of these people on this committee have been doing that work. Some people have been working on anti-fraud bills that your party chose to vote against. For inexplicable reasons. But regardless, all of that is happening in a set of other spaces that are not this committee. And, you know, the reason I think it's important that we don't just change the definition from fraud prevention and government oversight to government oversight is exactly the reason and what I think that this report has turned into, which is this is sort of no Democratic leader left undisparaged. But it actually, and I think that there are pieces in this pages that in a different context could actually be useful. There is pieces in a different context that we have learned that we could have in the missed opportunity would have been going down and talking about that fraud prevention and getting more structural. I said this last week. But we didn't do that. Because it was, you know, and I'm not going to take the bait to be able to school you again on how our elections work and how a conviction means that the system of oversight worked. But sort of bringing in, vacillating wildly from Medicaid fraud to voter fraud to whatever the Center of the American Experiment has a report on tomorrow is not actually good governing. It is about, again, painting that the picture has been painted about what Democrats are. And again, that's not a good use of state dollars. And it's not actually taking seriously the problem, the fraud prevention problem. The last thing I'll say is, you know, I think this is not the lesson. To that point, I guess I'd say about, we've been talking a lot about the Attorney General and his office, right? And we all know how that works. And I think that that's been one of the intentionally misleading pieces of all this. It's not just that the AG came in and told us about the 350 prosecutions. I was sitting in public safety where we heard about the Medicaid Fraud Control Unit that is under-resourced compared to other states, which we are taking care of, and is overperforming. And you might not like the Attorney General. You might have a candidate you want to beat him. But when we have the nonpartisan prosecutors and we see, as it compares to other places in the country, the conviction rate, the restitution rate, and the places that we have given the AG authority, which is in Medicaid fraud, it's not in SNAP, it's not in many other places, which I think my colleagues across the aisle learned on this committee, but their criminal conviction authority for the Medicaid Fraud Control Unit, they are, to use a colloquial term, punching above their weight compared to other states that are also trying to fight this issue of Medicaid fraud. And that is not at all encompassed in here. In fact, that there is a quote here that I think is misleading, and if we had had the opportunity to actually look at this, it said, I think, that it's that the state, that the AG is prosecuting relatively few cases. I think that that should be corrected. I think if we had had this report ahead of time, we could have not done this in this hearing, but actually just said to you, there's lots of typos in this report too. There's misquotes that I don't actually think were intentional. But when I'm going through this, I mean, if you want me to give you my red lines, we can, but that's not what this process was meant for, and it's not what this process allowed. The last thing, and I think the most important thing, and again, how you all have described this is telling. Modeling anything after Congress is not what Minnesota wants. It doesn't seem like a good model. People right now think that Congress is broken across the aisle. Mm-hmm. And when we look at their oversight hearings, they are show trials. And we know that, and you know that, and it doesn't matter. Whoever is in charge, the opposite folks who are called in front of the committee know that. But the partisan show trials of Congress is not something that we should emulate here. I think, in fact, what we should emulate is the work that's been happening in other committees, which is folks digging into the problem, folks working with both each other and the people who are impacted by by this fraud and by the abuse, by people in the agencies and people in local government, but all of those stakeholders together. That's not what Congress is doing, and nobody would say that that's what Congress is doing. And so I think that using Congress as a model, which I heard you say, Chair Robbins, is exactly what this is doing, and it is exactly what's wrong for Minnesota and wrong for what we are trying to accomplish, which is actually good nonpartisan work to protect people and the services that we have said that they deserve and that we want to protect taxpayer dollars. But modeling this report after the show trials of Congress is bad. I think it is a bad approach. It's a bad approach we've been saying for now 2 years. And unfortunately, that's the report. This report is just the final proof point that that's what this is about. It's trying to be Congress, and again, Minnesotans don't want Congress here in their state.
Thank you. I have thoughts, but I will go on to Vice Chair Anderson and then Representative Nash.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I think with this, I wish this committee's purpose, which it wasn't up front, was to look at legislation. And unfortunately, it wasn't. That wasn't the purpose of the committee. And because of that, all of us, many of us, certainly me and others, spent a lot of time doing bipartisan work going through other committees. It would have been wonderful to go through this committee rather than to get stuck in state gov twice after going through committees on the OIG bill and having it held, frankly, by Representative Cleburne, who would not let it go anywhere until a month ago. So it would have been, it's something for this committee, if it exists next year, to think about, that maybe we should allow this committee to have legislation go through it, because it wasn't the purpose. So that criticism, I think, is, you know, not real. What I do think this committee accomplished was it brought to light, it was investigative, and it brought to light a lot of things that are happening. We were able to actually talk to the agencies, talk to whistleblowers, talk to folks, go way beyond what we do at the Audit Commission, which is we get a specific topic. We do have the agencies in, but we're really talking more to the auditor. So we were able to bring to light just how deep and widespread the fraud is in Minnesota. And between this committee, the Audit Commission, the feds coming in to prosecute, we have, it's, the last 2 years have changed the narrative and in Minnesota, unfortunately, to the negative. So I think it has been very good use of our committee time. I think it's very good for the state of Minnesota, because we have to change everything. We have to change what we're doing. We have to change how our agencies are doing things, and we have to actually take the recommendations from O'Malley's report very, very seriously. And not all of those things are going to be going through this legislature this year, but a lot of them are. So those are the things that's, to me, that's the starting point for future legislatures, is what didn't happen out of O'Malley's report, and what can we do to absolutely put a stop to this. So I think it's good. I've enjoyed my time. I've enjoyed both the majority and the minority in discussing things. So thank you.
Thank you. Representative Nash.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. My apologies for being late. I was in a leadership meeting, but, you know, I came in for a couple of innings of late relief, and I appreciate the time to have been here. But I did watch the proceedings of the committee as we were going through the last 2 years, and I want to just commend a lot of the folks that have been on this committee for acting as a giant flashlight for the state of Minnesota. And I just want to point out that so many of the things that were uncovered in this committee have made their way into bills in other parts of the legislature. So to disagree with my colleague, you didn't necessarily have to have a bill originate here to have the concept be uncovered here. As somebody who watches the bill introductions every day, my colleagues that have been on the committee for quite some time have both themselves introduced bills, but then have shared with other members the workload of also carrying bills that have been from ideas that were uncovered here. And before I got to the committee, I would sit back and I would watch. I'm like, well, that was not on my bingo card. Oh, wow. Well, here we go again. I did not see that one coming. This committee has done excellent work, and I commend the members who have been here for a long time on this. I guess we're adjourned. So I just wanted to level set that, because I think that the decryment against the fact that we didn't do bills coming through here is really kind of a weak one. And I wrote down that I thought that the motto of this committee should be to make fraud unacceptable. That's sort of the mission statement of this committee, is make fraud unacceptable. And I would say you probably would have had a full agenda if you would have met every single day. We are not running low on fraud here in the state of Minnesota. And that's sad. Because as you go out to talk to your constituents, it's running thick and muddy through the streets. And for the longest time, we have heard, oh, there's no fraud. It's fine. There's just a little dalliance over here. And I thought in many ways it was a lot like if you've ever watched The Wizard of Oz, where they say, don't pay attention to the guy behind the curtain. There's nothing going on here. But there's fraud in every single area of state government. And as somebody who, one of my favorite movies is Mr. Smith Goes to Washington, I find that to be wholly unacceptable that we have allowed through the previous three biennia before we started this to just sort of put blinders on and not pay attention to the fact that fraud is everywhere. So I think that it's also important to see this committee as an important function of the legislature, to have a legislative committee of oversight over governance and fraud. I think that's important. And I know I heard from my colleagues that we don't want to be like Congress. Well, we should have a committee that looks at the conduction of business at the state of Minnesota. Now, as the chair of state government, that's part of our purview, but we can't do it all. So in many ways, I view a committee like this as an investigative arm of the legislature who will kick out ideas or the members draft bills along these ways. I think it's a very important thing, and I think that the work was really well done. I think that we have seen some things, once again, that were probably on nobody's bingo cards. And I think that this has been the biennia of tackle fraud head on. I know that one of my bills that is now law that was poo-pooed by the DFL, House File 3, which I lovingly called fraud notes, has been up and running now for over a year, and the departments are saying, thank you, Representative Nash, for passing House File 3 into existence, because now we are seeing that we have a lack of ability to handle and tackle internal controls. The OLA is now pointing that out to us, and that we now have another thing that we can begin to use as a systemic reduction in the potentiality for fraud. So that's one thing. I've done some other things that a lot of our members have gotten behind, a lot of your members have gotten behind. So I think that it's important to look at this committee and not just say, well, it was a witch hunt, which is my words, not yours, but it sounds like that's where your heart is. And I would say, Representative Greenman, you know, you don't like this particular report. I don't know that you know, I'm sure you do. You could do a minority report. There's still time for you to do a minority report. If you have this deep and burning desire to tell us why this is a bad committee or somehow say these areas of fraud are still good, we would welcome to read a minority report that you might choose to author. I'm sure all of us would buy the first copies off the press because we would love to know why this report, in your estimation, falls well short. And lastly, Madam Chair, I hate to correct my colleagues, but Representative Anderson, it wasn't two times in state government that your bill was blown up. It took four times for us to get it out of committee. Four times it took. Your bill was also shot down. In the early days of denial of fraud, it was shot down. But then it took us four times to get it out of committee, because the governor had sent messages to Chair Cleburne and others. No, don't want that. I saw the documents from the working group, Representative Pinto. So if you'd like to have that debate, oh, I'd welcome
You can
that.
Have that debate offline. We need to keep going.
But I would say that this committee has done yeoman's work, and that the state of Minnesota, the people who live here, should thank the folks who have sat on this, both on both sides of the aisle, but we can no longer allow the rampant fraud to be an acceptable cost of doing business, because it's not. And I always say this, it is not our money. It is not the department's money. The money that gets frittered away to fraud belongs to the taxpayers in every county of this state. And for people to lose sight of that is just criminal, in my opinion. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Altendorf.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. It has truly been an honor to serve on the Fraud Committee. And I just want to, you know, really commend Chair Robbins for her efforts. Seeing this firsthand in the last few weeks since I've been on the committee, the amount of time, the work, the analyzation, it is quite incredible to watch. And when you're on the inside, you see it even more clearly. And I truly mean that. You deserve so much credit. And the people of Minnesota, thank you. This should not be in any way partisan. I know I heard Representative Greenman say this committee was wrong for Minnesota. What was wrong for Minnesota is to have fraud across the state in 14 Medicaid programs. That's wrong for Minnesota. And as the minority party here in this committee wants to say that we did not have the right to do this, this was complete exposure. This was exposure of what had to be shown to the public in order to have the will for change. So it is a choice, the Democrat Party, to take ownership of the fraud that has happened under their leadership. That would have been a choice. And then to work together to end the fraud in the state of Minnesota, because as I hear them say, nobody wants this. No one likes fraud. But what I don't see from the Democrat Party, from the Walz administration, is the accountability. I haven't seen it. Neither has Minnesota. We haven't seen people being held account. We haven't seen people being fired. We haven't seen significant system changes. So as you say that this was wrong, when there's a problem, the problem has to be exposed. And that's what this committee did. And now instead of deflecting, because the Democrat Party is obviously embarrassed, it's time to take ownership. And the ownership can start with writing your minority report. Because I would love to see if there was an error that we made, then we should know that and we should correct that for the record. But just saying that this is wrong and refusing to reply to it is not a response, and it's not governing. It's not taking the steps that we need to move forward in Minnesota. When we heard from one of the testifiers, I believe it was Jay Swanson, that refugee camps in Kenya were giving instructions of how to fraud the government in Minnesota, that is a huge problem. When we are hearing stories of tourism fraud, because people are coming here because they hear Minnesota is so easy to fraud, that should be a huge red flag, folks. And yet, instead of coming in here today saying that this committee was wrong for Minnesota and trying to make a spectacle, we need to work together to end fraud in Minnesota, because that's what everyone expects, everyone who elected us to be here in these positions to do, to stop covering it up and to require the accountability that Minnesota deserves.
Thank you. Lead Pinto.
Thank you, Chair. I know that we're tight on time. I'll be very brief. I just want to respond to a few things. Members, fighting fraud is urgent. Solutions were needed now. They're needed any possible day we can get them. And the decision to have this committee not consider solutions was one that was made by the Republicans in charge of the committee. This document that we're about to vote on, after it's already been signed, and by the way, if there's any corrections to be made, apparently that comes after you sign and vote on it, which does not make any sense to me. This document is coming at the end of session, after we've already met for 2 years. We've been in session for 2 years, and governing at a tie is hard. Like, it requires hard, collaborative work. That's happened in other places. And I think that this document is illustration of the way that the committee has operated and where we end up. that it simply shows up. And when we point things out, and this is, I want to make sure to acknowledge this, there's regarding Attorney General Ellison, the comment was made that we didn't provide any evidence relating to the strength of his office regarding Medicaid fraud. May 5th, 2025, hearing before this committee, there's a presentation labeled AGO_DOCS, slide number 12. The federal government found that from 20 to 2022, Attorney General Ellison's Medicaid Fraud Control Unit had the most provider fraud convictions when compared to similarly sized states. And in recent years, that actually outpaced states with even larger budgets and staff sizes of fraud convictions. What concerns me is that it doesn't seem to concern you that the comments in this document all go from one direction and they don't provide the broader perspective. And I understand you say, oh, well, then after we've already signed and voted, there can be something else providing a perspective. But I think if you tell Minnesotans that the report of the Fraud Prevention Committee was produced simply by the Republicans, wasn't shown to Democrats before they'd already signed it and would have a vote, I think that people would have significant concerns about that. 350 prosecutions, convictions for Medicaid fraud. Regarding Attorney General Ellison, that he led to those convictions. So just that one example, and there are many others. So regardless of the speculation of fear-mongering in the committee, the Attorney General has done more to prevent and fight fraud than this committee. That's what I would say, and that's where we're at. So, Madam Chair, I assume we'll go to the vote. Thank you.
Thank you, Lee Pinto, and I just want to provide some closing comments. First of all, I am grateful for my colleagues in the minority. I think you have contributed a lot to these discussions. I'm grateful for all of the agencies who came and provided testimony. I'm grateful especially to the very brave whistleblowers who came and exposed fraud at great personal risk and who had been doing that for years and were ignored and retaliated against. And I just want to address a couple of the themes that we've had in this discussion, which I'm very grateful for this discussion. And I think one of the great things about this committee is that we've been having these very honest discussions for 2 years. We don't always agree, but we always say what's on our minds, and it has helped the state as we have addressed these issues. So first, the role of the House Oversight, Fraud Prevention, and State Agency Oversight Committee. We have at length found many things that will help prevent fraud through the testimony from the agencies, things we were shocked to hear that we didn't know they weren't doing, that Minnesotans assumed were happening, basic internal controls that any Minnesota company does and would go to jail for were not happening in our agencies. Agencies where we found out they were falsifying documents, backdating documents, and those things came out through these committee hearings where we questioned the agencies. And that was really important work that then led to bills on whistleblower protection, on internal controls, on prepayment reviews, on the Office of Inspector General. All of these things that we uncovered in this committee, which is the primary role of the committee, to expose fraud and surface solutions for fraud prevention, those ideas were then taken into action in other committees. And there are two reasons for that. And if there's a future legislative committee on fraud prevention and oversight, I hope they will consider why it happened this way. And for the record, I want to clarify. We were given one committee slot. Most committees meet two or three times a week. We had one committee slot for 2 years. We would not have had the opportunity to do these robust investigative hearings if we were also listening to bills every committee. Our regular committees of jurisdiction don't get to all the bills they want. And as we heard multiple times, many of the committees where there's a tie purposely bottled up a lot of the fraud prevention bills so they couldn't get action and they couldn't get referred to other committees. So if we were a required committee stop for bills, it would have been another bottleneck in the process to getting actual bills passed through the chamber. And we did not want to slow down real fraud prevention bills. But we also had to do the work of investigating that all the committees of jurisdiction do not have time to do. So that was the primary role of our once a week hearing. And we always ran out of time, as you know, because there was always more questions to ask, always more to cover. Secondly, we did model this in some ways after the House Oversight Committee in Congress, because there is no other precedent for a House Oversight Committee in the legislature. And I agree with you. Some of that stuff is show trial. I was out there as a witness. It was honestly disappointing as a citizen to be treated the way that Representative Rarick, Representative Hudson, and I were treated. We have not treated the witnesses in this committee that way. We have not been disrespectful to the agencies. We've asked hard questions, but we have given them every opportunity to present their case. We have not disrespected the public or the whistleblowers who have come before this committee. And I have not conducted that committee, this committee, in that way. And I absolutely reject that show trial notion. Finally, we have surfaced solutions. We've uncovered and exposed the vast amount of fraud in this state government under successive Democrat administrations, where the only people holding the criminals accountable have been our federal partners. And I agree the AG's office has done some good work in the Medicaid Fraud Control Unit, and maybe they're punching above their weight in some percentage sense, but compared to the scope of the fraud in this state, $9 billion, they have original jurisdiction, and they have not brought nearly as many cases as clearly there are out there. And so I look forward to the AG responding to my letter and providing documentation of that work. But finally, members, the most important thing is that we have helped illuminate the vast fraud that is criminally stealing money from taxpayers and is hurting our vulnerable citizens. And the most impactful testimony has been the vulnerable citizens who came to this committee and shared their stories. And I hope that sits with all of us as we continue this work, because that is the purpose of this committee. The fraud that has been enabled and covered up by the Democrat administrations has hurt Minnesotans, and continues to hurt them in real time. We have not finished our work. There's so much left to do. And I commend this work to all of you next session, and I hope you continue it. With that, members, we will vote on the motion to adopt the majority report with my recommendation that I would be happy to do this on Friday to hear a minority report. All those in favor of adopting the majority report, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. I'd like a roll call. I forgot to ask for my own roll call. Sorry, the clerk will take the roll.
Chair Robbins?
Aye.
Vice Chair Anderson?
Aye.
Lead Pinto?
Abstain.
Representative Altendorf?
Aye.
Representative Elkins? Representative Greenman?
Abstain.
Representative Nash? Representative Schultz?
There are four ayes, two abstains, zero nays, and two excused absent. The report is adopted. We are adjourned.